Chapter 113. All this time he was squeezing my hand with his damp fishy fingers, while I made every effort I decently could to get it away. But I was quite unsuccessful. He drew it under the sleeve of his mulberry-colored greatcoat, and I walked on, almost upon compulsion, arm in arm with him. "Shall we turn?" apostrophe apostrophe said Uriah, by and by wheeling the face about towards the town, on which the early moon was now shining, silvering the distant windows. "Before we leave the subject, you ought to understand," apostrophe said I, breaking a pretty long silence, "that I believe Agnes Wickfield to be as far above you, and as far removed from all your aspirations, as that moon herself." Apostrophe apostrophe, peaceful. "Ain't she?" apostrophe said Uriah. "Very. Now confess, Master Copperfield, that you haven't liked me quite as I have liked you. All along you've thought me too humble. Now, I shouldn't wonder?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "I am not fond of professions of humility," apostrophe I returned, "or professions of anything else." Apostrophe there now. Apostrophe apostrophe said Uriah, looking flabby and lead-colored in the moonlight. "Didn't I know it? But how little you think of the rightful humbleness of a person in my station, Master Copperfield. Father and me was both brought up at a foundation school for boys, and mother, she was likewise brought up at a public, sort of charitable, establishment. They taught us all a deal of humbleness, not much else, that I know of, from morning to night. We was to be humble to this person, and humble to that, and to pull off our caps here, and to make bows there, and always to know our place, and abase ourselves before our betters. And we had such a lot of betters. Father got the Monitor medal by being humble. So did one. Father got made a sexton by being humble. He had the character, among the gentlefolks, of being such a well-behaved man, that they were determined to bring him in. 'Be humble, Uriah,' says Father to me, 'and you'll get on.' It was what was always being dinned into you and me at school. It's what goes down best. 'Be humble,' says Father, 'and you'll do. And really it ain't done bad.'" Apostrophe, it was the first time it had ever occurred to me that this detestable cant of false humility might have originated out of the Heap family. I had seen the harvest, but had never thought of the seed. "When I was quite a young boy," apostrophe said Uriah, "I got to know what humbleness did, and I took to it. I ate humble pie with an appetite. I stopped at the humble point of my learning, and says I, 'Hold hard. When you offered to teach me Latin, I knew better. People like to be above you,' says Father, 'keep yourself down. I am very humble to the present moment, Master Copperfield, but I've got a little power.'" Apostrophe apostrophe, and he said all this I knew, as I saw his face in the moonlight, that I might understand he was resolved to recompense himself by using his power. I had never doubted his meanness, his craft and malice, but I fully comprehended now, for the first time, what a base, unrelenting, and revengeful spirit must have been engendered by this early, and this long, suppression. His account of himself was so far attended with an agreeable result, that it led to his withdrawing his hand in order that he might have another hug of himself under the chin. Once apart from him, I was determined to keep apart, and we walked back, side by side, saying very little more by the way. Whether his spirits were elevated by the communication I had made to him, or by his having indulged in this retrospect, I don't know, but they were raised by some influence. He talked more at dinner than was usual with him, asked his mother off duty, from the moment of our re-entering the house, whether he was not growing too old for a bachelor, and once looked at Agnes so, that I would have given all I had, for leave to knock him down. When we three males were left alone after dinner, he got into a more adventurous state. He had taken little or no wine, and I presume it was the mere insolence of triumph that was upon him, flushed perhaps by the temptation my presence furnished to its exhibition. I had observed yesterday that he tried to entice Mr. Wickfield to drink, and, interpreting the look which Agnes had given me as she went out, had limited myself to one glass, and then proposed that we should follow her. I would have done so again today, but Uriah was too quick for me. We seldom see our present visitor, sir, apostrophe he said, addressing Mr. Wickfield, sitting, such a contrast to him, at the end of the table, and I should propose to give him welcome in another glass or two of wine, if you have no objections. Mr. Copperfield, your health and happiness. ... I was obliged to make a show of taking the hand he stretched across to me. And then, with very different emotions, I took the hand of the broken gentleman, his partner. Come, fellow partner, said Uriah, if I may take the liberty now, suppose you give us something or another appropriate to Copperfield. I pass over Mr. Wickfield's proposing my aunt, his proposing Mr. Dick, his proposing Doctor's Commons, his proposing Uriah, his drinking everything twice, his consciousness of his own weakness, the ineffectual effort that he made against it, the struggle between his shame in Uriah's deportment, and his desire to conciliate him. The manifest exultation with which Uriah twisted and turned, and held him up before me. It made me sick at heart to see, and my hand recoils from writing it. Come, fellow partner. Said Uriah, at last, I'll give you another one, and I humbly ask for bumpers, seeing I intend to make it the divinest of her sex. Her father had his empty glass in his hand. I saw him set it down, look at the picture she was so like, put his hand to his forehead, and shrink back in his elbow chair. I'm an humble individual to give you her health, proceeded Uriah, but I admire adore her. No physical pain that her father's gray head could have borne, I think, could have been more terrible to me than the mental endurance I saw compressed now within both his hands. Agnes, said Uriah, either not regarding him, or not knowing what the nature of his action was, Agnes Wickfield is, I am safe to say, the divinest of her sex. May I speak out, among friends? To be her father is a proud distinction, but to be her husband, spare me from ever again hearing such a cry, as that with which her father rose up from the table. What's the matter? Said Uriah, turning of a deadly color. You are not gone mad, after all, Mr. Wickfield, I hope. If I say I've an ambition to make your Agnes my Agnes, I have as good a right to it as another man. I have a better right to it than any other man. I had my arms round Mr. Wickfield, imploring him by everything that I could think of, oftenest of all by his love for Agnes, to calm himself a little. He was mad for the moment, tearing out his hair, beating his head, trying to force me from him, and to force himself from me, not answering a word, not looking at or seeing anyone, blindly striving for he knew not what, his face all staring, and distorted a frightful spectacle. I conjured him, incoherently, but in the most impassioned manner, not to abandon himself to this wildness, but to hear me. I besought him to think of Agnes, to connect me with Agnes, to recollect how Agnes and I had grown up together, how I honored her and loved her, how she was his pride and joy. I tried to bring her idea before him in any form. I even reproached him with not having firmness to spare her the knowledge of such a scene as this. I may have effected something, or his wildness may have spent itself, but by degrees he struggled less, and began to look at me strangely at first, then with recognition in his eyes. At length he said, I know, Trotwood. My darling child and you I know. But look at him. He pointed to Uriah, pale and glowering in a corner, evidently very much out in his calculations, and taken by surprise. Look at my torturer, he replied. Before him I have step by step abandoned name and reputation, peace and quiet, house and home. apostrophe, I have kept your name and reputation for you, and your peace and quiet, and your house and home too, apostrophe said Uriah, with a sulky, hurried, defeated air of compromise. Don't be foolish, Mr. Wickfield. If I have gone a little beyond what you were prepared for, I can go back, I suppose. There's no harm done. Apostrophe, I looked for single motives in everyone, apostrophe said Mr. Wickfield, and I was satisfied I had bound him to me by motives of interest. But see what he is, oh, see what he is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you had better stop him, Copperfield, if you can, apostrophe cried Uriah, with his long forefinger pointing towards me. He'll say something presently, mind you. He'll be sorry to have said afterwards, and you'll be sorry to have heard. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'll say anything. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Wickfield, with a desperate air. Why should I not be in all the world's power, if I am in yours? Apostrophe, apostrophe, mind. I tell you. Apostrophe, said Uriah, continuing to warn me. If you don't stop his mouth, you're not his friend. Why shouldn't you be in all the world's power, Mr. Wickfield? Because you have got a daughter. You and me know what we know, don't we? Let sleeping dogs lie who wants to rouse them? I don't. Can't you see I am as humble as I can be? I tell you, if I've gone too far, I'm sorry. What would you have, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, Trotwood, Trotwood. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Wickfield, wringing his hands. What I have come down to be, since I first saw you in this house. I was on my downward way then, but the dreary, dreary road I have traversed since. Weak indulgence has ruined me. Indulgence in remembrance, and indulgence in forgetfulness. My natural grief for my child's mother turned to disease. My natural love for my child turned to disease. I have infected everything I touched. I have brought misery on what I dearly love, I know you know. I thought it possible that I could truly love one creature in the world, and not love the rest. I thought it possible that I could truly mourn for one creature gone out of the world, and not have some part in the grief of all who mourned. Thus the lessons of my life have been perverted. I have preyed on my own morbid coward heart, and it has preyed on me. Sordid in my grief, sordid in my love, sordid in my miserable escape from the darker side of both, oh see the ruin I am, and hate me, shun me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he dropped into a chair, and weakly sobbed. The excitement into which he had been roused was leaving him. Uriah came out of his corner. I don't know all I have done, in my fatuity, apostrophe said Mr. Wickfield, putting out his hands, as if to deprecate my condemnation. He knows best, apostrophe meaning Uriah Heep, for he has always been at my elbow, whispering me. You see the millstone, that he is about my neck. You find him in my house, you find him in my business. You heard him, but a little time ago. What need have I to say more? Apostrophe, you haven't need to say so much, nor half so much, nor anything at all, apostrophe observed Uriah, half defiant, and half fawning. You wouldn't have took it up so, if it hadn't been for the wine. You'll think better of it tomorrow, sir. If I have said too much, or more than I meant, what of it? I haven't stood by it. Apostrophe, the door opened, and Agnes, gliding in, without a vestige of color in her face, put her arm round his neck, and steadily said, Papa, you are not well. Come with me. Apostrophe, he laid his head upon her shoulder, as if he were oppressed with heavy shame, and went out with her. Her eyes met mine for but an instant, yet I saw how much she knew of what had passed. I didn't expect he'd cut up so rough, Master Copperfield, apostrophe said Uriah. But it's nothing. I'll be friends with him tomorrow. It's for his good. I'm humbly anxious for his good. Apostrophe, I gave him no answer, and went upstairs into the quiet room, where Agnes had so often sat beside me at my books. Nobody came near me until late at night. I took up a book, and tried to read. I heard the clock strike 12, and was still reading, without knowing what I read, when Agnes touched me. You will be going early in the morning, Trotwood. Let us say goodbye now. She had been weeping, but her face then was so calm and beautiful. Heaven bless you. She said, giving me her hand. Dearest Agnes. I returned, I see you ask me, not to speak of tonight, but is there nothing to be done? There is God to trust in. She replied. Can I do nothing I, who come to you with my poor sorrows? And make mine so much lighter, she replied. Dear Trotwood, no. Dear Agnes, I said, it is presumptuous for me, who am so poor in all in which you are so rich goodness, resolution, all noble qualities to doubt or direct you, but you know how much I love you, and how much I owe you. You will never sacrifice yourself to a mistaken sense of duty, Agnes? More agitated for a moment than I had ever seen her, she took her hands from me, and moved a step back. Say you have no such thought, dear Agnes. Much more than sister. Think of the priceless gift of such a heart as yours, of such a love as yours. Oh. Long, long afterwards, I saw that face rise up before me, with its momentary look, not wondering, not accusing, not regretting. Oh, long, long afterwards, I saw that look subside, as it did now, into the lovely smile, with which she told me she had no fear for herself I need, have none for her, and parted from me by the name of brother, and was gone. It was dark in the morning, when I got upon the coach at the inn door. The day was just breaking when we were about to start, and then, as I sat thinking of her, came struggling up the coach side, through the mingled day and night, Uriah's head. Copperfield. Said he, in a croaking whisper, as he hung by the iron on the roof, I thought you'd be glad to hear before you went off, that there are no squares broke between us. I've been into his room already, and we've made it all smooth. Why, though I mumble, I'm useful to him, you know, and he understands his interest, when he isn't in liquor. What an agreeable man he is, after all, Master Copperfield. I obliged myself to say, that I was glad he had made his apology. Oh, to be sure. Said Uriah. When a person's humble, you know, what's an apology? So easy. I say. I suppose, with a jerk, you have sometimes plucked a pear before it was ripe, Master Copperfield? I suppose I have, I replied. I did that last night, said Uriah, but it'll ripen yet. It only wants attending to. I can wait. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.